Okay, today is January 22nd, 2014. We are here in United Orthodox Synagogues of Houston, and we are beginning our new study of Sefer Yirmiyahu, the book of Jeremiah. And Shula, you should get one of those chairs.
Wasn't Jeremiah bullfrog?
And I'm going to hand out some, I don't know if I have enough for everyone, so if you don't mind sharing. We're going to get to those. What I wanted to do today is give a brief introduction, not only to Yirmiyahu, but to the notion of, to try to answer the question, who is a prophet? Not necessarily the religious characteristics of prophecy. That's a good question. Not necessarily the question of what type of personal characteristics the prophet has, but what did the prophet face when he was going about doing his work? What was his personality? Our main sources for today are two really fantastic works. One is a book called The Prophets by Abraham Joshua Heschel, which was his doctoral thesis, actually, in Berlin. And it was written in German and then was translated into English. And the second is the book, which is the reason why I thought we would study the book of Yirmiyahu to begin with this semester, a new book on Yirmiyahu written by Binyamin Lau, Rav Benny Lau, who's the rabbi of the Ramban Shul in Yerushalayim. And it is an amazing, amazing work. Essentially, what Rabbi Lau does is he actually reorders the book of Yirmiyahu to teach it in accordance with Yirmiyahu's prophecies during each of the prophets that Yirmiyahu's career spanned. Yirmiyahu's career spanned the life of three kings, and the book is disjointed. The book, the way we have it, is disjointed as to when he is speaking to who, and it's not so clear what's going on in the book, but what Rabbi Lau does is he reordered the book to make it clearer for us. And we're gonna follow the outline of his book in studying Sefer Yirmiyahu. But before we do that, we're going to read a few things that he writes about the Navi. And we're also gonna start, however, with Heschel. And the reason why this is important is because we want to try to understand the personality of a prophet. Right? What in our case, Yirmiyahu. He was chosen by God, and we're gonna note that he didn't want the job to begin with. He simply was not interested. But God sort of gives him an offer he can't refuse, makes him an offer he can't refuse. And we'll also, while we read some of Heschel's stuff, we'll also get a better sense also to understand some of the questions that arose when we studied episodes in the life of Eliyahu, which we just finished 22 weeks of studying Eliyahu. There were a lot of things that sort of puzzled us about Eliyahu. Two things which puzzled us about Eliyahu, which I think we'll get answers to from some of Heschel's writings, were how could Eliyahu be so hyperbolic in how bad the Jewish people were? Right? He exaggerates. He would say, "I'm the only one left," right, "who's loyal to you, God," while we know that there were hundreds of prophets hiding, right, in caves from Izebel. The fact that they were hiding in caves from Izebel proves that they too were loyal to God. And that's sort of one question that we raised a few times. Another question that we raised is he was a failure, right? Eliyahu HaNavi didn't accomplish very much. He didn't change Izebel and Ahav. And he didn't change Bnei Yisrael. There's no indication in the text that Bnei Yisrael changes its ways. A third question that we had about Eliyahu was he seemed to have been a loose cannon, right? He seems to have been making it up as he went along and not taking instruction from God. In fact, there were a few times we said that God all but tells Eliyahu to stand down from his stubborn position, and Eliyahu refuses to do so. We're going to see answers to some of these questions when we read Heschel. It's even if we weren't studying Yirmiyahu, it'd be worthwhile to read some of what Heschel has to say about the prophets. So let's start with the handout that I gave. This is again from Heschel's The Prophets, and the first chapter, the first thing he tries to do when he's writing about the various prophets is explain. I have one more. You may have to help me where we are because I didn't copy it straight. There's some we mix. I jumped around, but I think I'll be able to figure it out. The first thing he tries to get us to do when studying the Nevi'im is to figure out who these people were. So the first thing he talks about is sensitivity to evil on page number 3. It's okay. He says, what manner of man is a prophet? And then Heschel compares a prophet to a philosopher. A philosopher is interested in metaphysics, big ideas. But then he writes, if you read a prophet, you may be disappointed because there are no big ideas, Heschel's arguing, in the works of the prophecy, in the prophets. The prophets are really more concerned with the very real lives of the people. On the fourth line, instead of dealing with the timeless issues of being and becoming, of matter and form, of definitions and demonstrations, he is thrown into orations about widows and orphans, about the corruption of judges and affairs in the marketplace. Instead of showing us a way through the elegant mansions of the mind, the prophets take us to the slums. Heschel is a beautiful writer. The translation is beautiful too. Again, he wrote this originally in German. But we're seeing here that we have to understand what a prophet's goal is. A prophet's goal is not to change the way people think. A prophet's goal is to change the way people act. In the very here and now, in how, first of all, individuals, but also, you'll see in Yirmiyahu and all the other prophets as well, they're not only interested in speaking to individuals, they speak to governments, they speak to the leaders, they speak to the kings, they speak to the ruling class. They want to make sure that the little people who are not being taken advantage of, and those who have the least ability to take care of themselves, like the widows and the orphans, are not succumbing to any type of unfair treatment. The world is a proud place full of beauty, but the prophets are scandalized and rave as if the whole world were a slum. So here we get to this idea that if you read some of these prophets, it sounds like everyone was corrupt. It sounds like everyone was on the take, and everyone was immoral. And Heschel's argument is that that's what makes a prophet. A prophet is super sensitive to wrongdoing. So when you're super sensitive to something, there's a tendency to overstate how bad it is. And that's what the prophets do. And Heschel says in another part of this introductory chapter that they, in fact, were unfair in their language. In fact, let's just look at it. If you look on page 13, the page number 13, where it says sweeping allegations. He says, if justice means giving every person what he deserves, the scope and severity of the accusations by the prophets of Israel hardly confirmed that principle. And he says, the prophets were unfair to the people of Israel. Their sweeping allegations, overstatements, and generalizations defied standards of accuracy. So that's a hallmark of the prophets. So when we read Yirmiyahu, we have to keep that in mind. We have to keep in mind that as he's going to make these sweeping claims about how everyone is terrible, it probably wasn't the case that everyone was terrible. Now, what's the reason, however? Why would, maybe I'll pose this as a question. Heschel answers it in the next page. But why do you think the prophets do this? Why do they speak in these sweeping allegations where it sounds like everybody is just awful?
But they're speaking when God looks at the world. That God is at this level and everybody else is.
Okay, good. That's very good. That's one of Heschel's explanations is that the prophet looks at it from God's perspective. God does not really accept excuses, and I shouldn't say God doesn't accept excuses. God sees through the excuses, and maybe when you see things through God's eyes, maybe things are much worse than we think they are. That's one explanation that Heschel gives. Anyone else? He gives another explanation as well. His explanation that he gives is on the bottom of the next page, on page 14, where it says, few are guilty, all are responsible. This little terse comment, all are guilty, few are guilty, all are responsible, is one of Heschel's most well-known and most powerful statements. And he writes as follows. What was happening in Israel surpassed its intrinsic significance. Israel's history comprised the drama of God and all men. God's kingship and man's hopes were at stake in Jerusalem. God was alone in the world, unknown or discarded. The countries of the world were full of abominations, violence, falsehood. Here was one land, one people, cherished and chosen for the purpose of transforming the world. This people's failure was the most serious. The beloved of God worshipped the Baalim, the vineyard of the Lord yielded wild grapes. Israel, holy to the Lord, defiled my land, made my heritage abomination. Here he gets to the point. Defining truth as the conformity of assertion to facts, we may censor the prophets for being inaccurate, incongruous, even absurd. Defining truth as reality reflected in a mind, we see prophetic truth as reality reflected in God's mind. So that was Eddie's answer. But then he goes on to say one other thing. If you turn the page, I hope I gave it to you, page 16.
Yes.
Okay. On the top of page 16, men are greatly praised when worthy of being reproved. Only a strong heart can bear bitter invectives. Above all, the prophets remind us of the moral state of the people. Few are guilty, but all are responsible. If we admit that the individual is in some measure conditioned or affected by the spirit of society, an individual's crime discloses society's corruption. So if one person does something wrong, and the society allows it to happen, then really, as he says, all are responsible for allowing it to happen. And that's exactly what he says. In a community not indifferent to suffering, uncompromisingly impatient with cruelty and falsehood, continually concerned for God and every man, crime would be infrequent rather than common. Right? A society allows things to happen, so even the group that did not actually do the crime, but they do not scream out against the crime and say that type of activity is unacceptable, we're not going to stand by and sit back and let it happen. So few are guilty, but all are responsible. So when a prophet like Yirmiyahu screams that everyone is terrible, he's not suggesting that everyone did all those terrible things. What he's suggesting is the society allowed them to happen without any protest, and so everyone is in some way responsible for those things happening. And that is that's the approach of a prophet. So we see two things so far. First of all, they're very sensitive to evil, and when they state things in exaggerated terms, it's because they're looking at how the whole society plays a role into allowing bad behavior to continue. This is something which we see. Not that I want to pick on any one particular group of people. But we're seeing now the concern. Everyone talks about Wall Street, right? Wall Street's corrupt. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying that's what people are, right? Wall Street's corrupt because there was sort of an ethos there that the goal was to make as much profit for the banks as possible, even if at the end of the day, people knew that some of these instruments that were being sold were not going to stand up under pressure. But no one said anything, and even the people who didn't do anything particularly wrong are necessarily, at least in Heschel's terms, responsible because they allowed that type of ethos to continue unchecked. And that's the type. So this approach that Heschel is suggesting is used by the prophets is something which is very still, I think, rings true. So that's one point that Heschel talks about. Okay, then I want to note one other thing on page turn to page 9.
Just for Jeremiah, it's generally one thing.
Generally, the prophets. Right? Jeremiah is a very good example of this. Yirmiyahu is an excellent example of this, but it's true. Heschel is giving an introduction to prophets in general. If you look on page 9, where it says an octave too high, he says as follows. We and the prophets have no language in common. To us, the moral state of society, for all its stains and spots, seems fair and trim. To the prophet is dreadful. Right? Again, they're super sensitive. So many deeds of charity are done, so much decency radiates day and night. Yet to the prophet, satiety of the conscience is prudery and flight from responsibility.
What does prudery mean?
It's not being fully engaged.
Okay.
Our standards are modest, our sense of injustice tolerable, timid, our moral indignation impermanent. Yet human violence is interminable, unbearable, permanent. To us, life is often serene. In the prophet's eye, the world reels in confusion. So another way to say this super sensitivity, and then even though on balance, right, there's lots of charity, on balance people are taken care of, on balance things are fair, balance is not really the concern of the prophet. The prophet is shooting for almost a utopian state of mind. And there's little margin of error for a prophet. Okay. And now,
it says the prophet makes no concession to man's capacity. In other words, he doesn't take the average man into consideration.
Right. Now, it's we shouldn't overstate the case, because there's also a great deal of compassion by the prophets, and there's an attempt and a belief that the people can be better and can fix themselves. So it's not that the prophet is totally negative and thinks that the end is inevitable, that destruction is inevitable, but they are super sensitive to the realities of life. Just one other point in Heschel's statements in terms of the success rate of the prophets. We'll see the success rate of the prophets in Rabbi Lau's introduction. In the meantime, we'll look at one other point in Heschel on page 17, where it says loneliness and misery. This is also a very important aspect. We're going to see this a lot in Yirmiyahu. In fact, the examples that Heschel brings us are from Yirmiyahu. He says, none of the prophets seem enamored with being a prophet, nor proud of his attainment.
I'm sorry, what page?
Page 17. What drove Jeremiah, for instance, to being a prophet? Cursed be the day on which I was born. These are Yirmiyahu's words. Because he did not kill me in the womb, so my mother would have been my grave. Why did I come forth out of the womb to toil and sorrow and spend my days in shame? Over the life of a prophet, words are invisibly inscribed. All flattery, abandon ye who enter here. To be a prophet is both a distinction and an affliction. The mission he performs is distasteful to him, right? Because the prophet was against the rich. The prophet was against the ruling class. The prophet was against the people who weren't following God. There was almost no group of people that the prophet did not aim his words at. So nobody liked him. The prophet bears scorn and reproach. He is stigmatized as a madman by his contemporaries and by some modern scholars as abnormal. And by the way, what we'll often see in prophets is that while one prophet is prophesying doom if you don't fix yourself, there's another prophet or group of prophets who are saying everything's okay. So who are you going to listen to? Right? Human nature is to listen to the person who says everything's okay. So it's bad enough that the prophet is telling us we have to change our ways on a regular basis. It's even harder for the prophet to gain any traction when someone else, who's also at least assumed to be a prophet, is saying that you're okay, God thinks you're fine, don't change, the enemy's not coming, the temple's not going to be destroyed. So human nature is simply to listen to the one who's telling us that everything's okay. That's just the way we are. Yeah.
Moses wasn't sort of a prophet, was he?
He was. Well, we'll see. He wasn't. Well, it's. I think the jury is out as to how successful he was. They're constantly complaining.
Yes.
His job.
They respected him. He was respected. He was the leader that told them what to do and everything. They respected him.
The rabbinic tradition is actually that they liked Aaron more.
Yeah, okay, that I'm not arguing. I'm saying the normal. When you're talking about this,
right? I mean, did they hate him? Maybe, right. Maybe I'm speaking too hyperbolic, like the prophet.
They respected
him.
Decisions. Where's a normal prophet?
I'm not sure how much they respected him. They're constantly yelling at him. They're constantly saying he's terrible.
That's just Jews.
Okay. Right. Right. But I'm not so sure how much they respected him. It's. I think it's far from obvious. It's far from obvious that they respected him as so much.
But he was not confident all along, as far as the
service. Correct. Right. He's like Yirmiyahu. He was not interested in the job, and a few times he said, I don't want this job anymore. And at the beginning he said, I can't speak And by the way, kaved peh v'kaved lashon, we always assume that means he had a speech impediment. But it could also mean that he just felt he wasn't going to be successful, effective, wasn't going to be convincing. I have a heavy way of speaking. I'm not a good communicator. I'm not going to get the point across. Speaker. And you know what? He was right. Because you could argue that he didn't get the point across, but God wanted them anyway.
Because they were humble. They said, who am I to...
That's later. First, he says, "I can't do it. I'm either physically or there's some part of my character, my abilities that make me not the right person for this." That's one way to read Moshe's original claims. Okay, now let's look at some of what Binyamin Lau has to say. He makes some great points. He says, if we want to compare a prophet, let me ask you this. Who in today's modern world would you say is closest or could be closest, and don't only think in religious terms, who is closest or could be closest to a prophet?
You.
Okay. Okay. Anyone? What?
Rock stars or certain musicians.
Oh, interesting. Why musicians?
Songwriters.
Why songwriters?
They, certain ones, point out things that are wrong.
Okay, good. Excellent. That's a good one. Anyone else?
Movie makers, directors.
Okay. The question is, what modern, contemporary job or type of person would be most akin to the biblical prophet? The biblical prophet is the one who's speaking truth to power, who's pointing out that what the ruling class is doing. Okay, so rabbi could be one, but rabbis don't necessarily have as much reach those entertainment industries are a very good one. Although one would argue that the entertainment industry would be a target of the modern day prophet.
How about world leaders, like prime ministers?
Well, world leaders were the targets of the prophets. The prophets were the ones who would tell the world leaders that you're not acting properly.
But now,
who are the modern day prophets?
Contender to rulers.
What's that?
Contender to rulers.
Contender?
To rulers.
The opposition.
Somebody that's taking the job.
Ah. No, they're probably just the same. They just want the job.
Well, so then they're pointing out to the...
Yeah, but not for the purposes of the a prophet never wanted to become king. Right? So Rabbi Lau writes something very interesting. He says as follows. He notes this. He says, in terms of today's social milieu, the prophet might be regarded as something of a public intellectual, a man of letters, an eternal critic, an outsider to the system, a gadfly who must summon all his literary or oratory powers to persuade his audience of the truth of his words and of the mortal danger of ignoring them. A prophecy does not depend upon its being heard. On the contrary, more often than not, it is disregarded. We're going to get to that. Right? A prophecy does not depend on its being heard. Most prophets were ignored. On the contrary, more often than not, it is disregarded, though the speaker's own belief in it does not allow him to remain silent. And then in a footnote, he says as follows. The suggestion that the journalist fulfills the role of the prophet appears in Rabbi Adin Steinholtz's King and Prophet. So some suggest, really, that a journalist could be today's prophet, although he notes that that may be not true in our day and age anymore, because sometimes journalists are heavily restrained editorially by what they're allowed to say and what they're not allowed to say. Nonetheless, that's a good point, right? They could be theoretically, right? A journalist. That's what we would hope from our journalists. We would hope our journalists do the research and give us the objective truth. We, especially now not as much in the print media, but in the TV media, the TV journalists, that's very much agenda driven. But I think it's an interesting point that we would hope that our journalists would speak truth to power, and he says that's the suggestion that of Rav Steinfeld. But now what about the success rates of the prophets? So he writes as follows. Throughout biblical history, prophets were have repeatedly failed to penetrate the collective consciousness. And here's the list of people he includes in the failures. Moses, the greatest of the prophets, Eliyahu and Elisha, the oratory prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the other 12 literary prophets, none were successful in getting their message across and inspiring the people to repentance. That's amazing. So, and then he makes this comment. Who's the only one that we know is successful?
Yonah.
Yonah. And who was he talking to? Nineveh.
To the city of
Nineveh. But who lived in Nineveh? Goyim. Goyim. Right? Non-Jews.
I think
Jonah is perhaps the only prophet who may be said to have fulfilled his mission, making the people of Nineveh see the error of their ways. The words of the prophets have been preserved for us, their descendants, so that we may learn what is right in the eyes of God and man. But in their own days, in real time, there is hardly a prophet who has redressed the social, religious, or political wrongs of Israel. The prophets barked, but the caravan kept moving. Moreover, when a prophet dared to deviate from his usual message of morality and challenge the existing order, he was declared an enemy of the people. Thus, the prophet Amos was banished by the priest of Beit El Amatziah in the name of King Yeravam. Get thee out. Kicked him out. So when a prophet does stand up, often they're in danger, literally in danger of their life, as we're going to see with Yirmiyahu as well. We're going to stop here. Next week we'll start the book of Yirmiyahu, but next week we're going to start with an amazing example from the book of Kings of the next question that we're going to address is, how do you know that a prophet is true? How do you know that a prophet is real? A lot of people could claim that they're prophets. How do one know that a prophet is true?
Well,
one,
he did it in Eliyahu. They tried on the camel.
Who?
Fire.
The Baal prophet. Yeah, they tried and they got.
So
one way to know that a prophet is true is the ones that get burned by God are not true, and the ones that live are true. Good. That's like as subtle as a sledgehammer.
Right,
right. So the question, and one of the things that Rabbi Lau points out is that if everyone says one thing, if all of the prophets agree, that's almost a sure sign that something's wrong. Right, and you have to pay attention to the one or the few who have a different point of view. And we're going to see an example of that in Malachim. With that, I'll whet your appetite and we'll stop. And I will see you all, please God, next week.